Welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, your source for learning more about fly fishing in cold water, warm water, and salt water. Hello, I'm Roger Maves, your host for tonight's show. On this broadcast, we'll be featuring Doug Rose, and he'll be answering your most important questions on fly fishing the Olympic Peninsula. This show will be 90 minutes in length, and we're broadcasting live over the Internet. If you'd like to ask Doug a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight. And while you're there, make sure you sign up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Just fill in your name and email address in the form on our homepage, and we'll keep you informed. This broadcast is being recorded and will be available for playback on our website within 48 hours after the show ends. So if you have to leave early, you can return to our website at your convenience and listen to the broadcast at any time. The content of this broadcast is copyrighted and is the property of the Knowledge Group, Inc., doing business as Ask About Fly Fishing. Recordings or transcriptions of this program cannot be distributed or sold in any form. When we return, we'll be talking with Doug Rose about fly fishing the Olympic Peninsula. Royal Gorge Anglers, a full-service fly shop on the Arkansas River in Canyon City, Colorado, provides both walk-wade and float fishing guide service on the Arkansas, South Platte, and several private high country ranches. They specialize in fly fishing education and work to assure that everyone taking a trip leaves being a better fly fisher. For the best service and the most fun in the Southern Rockies, visit the folks at Royal Gorge Anglers, the gateway to Southern Colorado, located conveniently on US 50, only 45 minutes from Colorado Springs. For more information, visit their website at www.royalgorgeanglers.com. That's www.royalgorgeanglers.com. Or call them at 888-994-6743. That's 888-994-6743. Before we introduce Doug, I'd like to let you know about the great gifts we have to give away tonight. For a drawing, we're giving away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. So you have two chances to win tonight in our drawing. Now, if you haven't registered for our drawing yet, you can do so now. Just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and look for the link under Doug's section that says click here to register for our drawing. Click on that link, fill out the form, and we'll announce the winners at the end of the show. We'll also be giving away a copy of Doug's book, Fly Fishing Guide to the Olympic Peninsula, courtesy of Frank Amato Publications. And you can find out more about the other books and magazines that they publish at www.amatobooks.com. That's www.amatobooks.com. So here's how you can win Doug's book. You must be the first person to answer the question we ask at the end of the show. And the question is going to be about something we talk about during the show. And you must submit your answer along with your name and location using the text box on our homepage. So listen closely and take notes and answer that question quickly at the end of the show, and you may be the winner of Doug's book. Tonight our guest is Doug Rose. Doug is an outdoor writer and fly fishing guide based in Washington's Olympic Peninsula. He is the author of three books, Fly Fishing Guide to the Olympic Peninsula, The Color of Winter, Steelhead Fly Fishing on the Olympic Peninsula, and Fly Fishing the Olympic Peninsula. He has written articles for The Drake, American Angler, Fly Fisherman, Fly Fishing and Tying Journal, Northwest Fly Fishing, and other national and regional publications. He was outdoor columnist for Port Townsend Leader and Peninsula Daily News for a number of years, and currently writes a blog and publishes quarterly newsletters on his website at www.dougrosefishing.com. His guiding focuses on steelhead and sea-run cutthroat trout on the rivers of the peninsula's remote west end and saltwater cutthroat fishing along the beaches, estuaries, and tidal creeks of the Olympic's eastern shore. Doug has been actively involved in conservation of the Olympic Peninsula's cold water fisheries and ecosystems for many years. He's on the board of directors of the Northwest Watershed Institute, which works to protect Tarbu Creek and its nearshore reaches. He was also an advocate and spokesperson for the Wild Olympics campaign and wrote for more than two decades on removing the dams and restoring the wild fish runs to the Elwha River in the Olympic Peninsula. One of the high points of his career was covering the ceremonies to celebrate the beginning of the Elwha Dam removal last fall for American Angler and Northwest Fly Fishing. Doug, welcome to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio.
Yeah, hi, Roger. It's great to be here. I'm looking forward to it.
Good, good. Well, good to have you on board, and it's turned up your volume a little bit, and we'll be good to go. We've got a bunch to cover tonight. I didn't realize it's been Oh, gosh, I don't want to count how many years since I've been up in your neck of the woods, but back in my college days, backpacking back in there, and I just didn't realize there was so much fishing going on in the Olympic Peninsula until I started reading your book, and then I was just amazed at all the opportunities that exist there. So let's just start out there. It's a large area, offers a lot of opportunities. Can you kind of give us an overview of the peninsula, and then we'll dig deeper as we go through the show into each of the major areas, because as you've already told me, they're quite different from one another. So can you give us an overview?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, the peninsula is about 100 miles across east to west and varies 60, 70 or so north to south. So it's a pretty big area. And right in the middle of it, there's the Olympic Mountain Range. So the weather systems that track in from the Pacific Ocean butt up against the mountain, so we get a lot of rain on the coast, and that's where you have the big forest, the rainforest, one of the only temperate rainforests in the northern hemisphere. But then by the time the weather systems get across the mountains to the leeward part of the peninsula, there's a lot less rain, you know, in the rain shadow, they call it, and that'll just be 13, 14 inches a year in some places. So you have a total different assemblages of fish in the different parts of the peninsula with bigger rivers on the coast, so they're more steelhead, Chinook, coho type fisheries, and the glacial rivers also support native char. And then when you get on the east side, you have more creeks, smaller rivers that have more reduced flows in the low water times of year. And then we have more chum and also coho there and a lot of sear and cutthroat. So you can really vary what you want to fish for depending on the time of year and the location you are. And then there's salt water on three sides of it. So there's, depending on if you're on the east side, which is more protected, or the coast, you can fish in the late spring through early fall on the coast and in the western strait and pretty much year-round in the eastern strait and Hood Canal. So there's always something to do out here.
Always something, huh? And quite the variety. So what you did mention a few fish there. Kind of give us a rundown on all the different kinds and then maybe kind of highlight the ones that we as fly fishers might want to target up there.
Sure. Well, first off, like I did mention, native char, right? They're endangered species now, so nobody can target them legally on the peninsula.
Okay.
In some Puget Sound areas. So char are off limits, but brook trout were introduced in all the high lakes, like the places you went to, probably, early in the 20th century. So there's the lake fishing that's a summer.
Yeah, I did go there in the 20th century. So.
Pardon? Right, yeah.
Yeah, so I think they were there when I was, I went in the latter
right.
part of the 20th century. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Go ahead.
But the peninsula is most famous for its steelhead and its salmon. And winter steelhead in particular, it's become a mecca in recent years because steelhead have become listed species throughout a big part of their native range on the West Coast.
Right.
And the environmentally significant unit, they call it, of steelhead for the coastal rivers out here is one of the few that's not listed. And so the fishing is pretty good. The runs are declined from historic levels, but there's still good fishing. And as a result of that, people from all over the world come here. I've had people from Japan and Germany and Scandinavia and England, and it's a big draw. In fact, it draws too many people currently.
Mm.
Then the salmon is a real popular fishery in the summer in saltwater. Historically, the little towns along the north coast here would be just full of people, not fly fishermen necessarily, hardly, in the summer for the Chinook first and then the coho. But in recent years, as regulations have gotten tighter and stuff, fly fishermen have targeted those, and that's become a very interesting and productive fishery. And then as the saltwater fish get closer in towards the eastern side of the peninsula, there's certain places where you catch them off the beach, which is really a lot of fun. It's nice catching, you know, 5 to 10 or 12 pound coho off the beach.
That's nice. Yeah.
And cutthroat is sort of the bread and butter fish, I think, out here, because depending where you are, you can fish for them any day of the year if you go to the right spot, and they're all wild here. One of the greatest things, I think, out here is, you know, cutthroat trout on the Olympic Peninsula evolved here. There hasn't been any hatchery introgression to speak of ever, so you're fishing for a wild fish in the place where it, you know, evolved. So that's a real exciting thing to me.
Yeah, it is. We just did a show on the greenback cutthroat trout here in Colorado, which is a
sure.
unique segment of that species. And
up in the park there.
Yeah, yeah. And what's also interesting about that is a lot of people don't know that cutthroat is really our only native trout, I believe. Well, we and golden, I think. Are
yeah, sure.
Too,
but
the browns and the rainbows are all planted, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And out here, the brookies are all planted because they're
brookies too.
Miles west of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the East Coast, they're native, but not out here.
Right.
But, yeah, the cutthroat is really amazing because these are called coastal cutthroat, and all the interior species evolved from these, if I understand that correctly.
Uh-huh.
And so it was pretty amazing how these coastal fish eventually got down into New Mexico and up into Rocky Mountain
National
Park.
Yeah.
But, and I didn't mention the saltwater marine species, you know, like the rockfish and lingcod and those fish, that, and surf perch. There's, you know, all sorts of fishing in the saltwater, too.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, because the peninsula is really kind of surrounded on three sides by water, right? So.
Exactly.
Some sort of, or another, whether it be a canal or the...
Right. The Hood Canal's on the east, the Strait of Juan de Fuca's on the north, and the Pacific Ocean's on the west.
The west, yeah.
So the west side gets, you know, a lot heavier surf and stuff like that. So that's pretty much a warm weather fishery in the western strait. But over here on the canal, it might sound crazy to people from other parts of the country, but we get some of our best cutthroat fishing in certain areas, like in December, January, and February.
Mm. Yeah, because you don't get that hard freeze winter, right?
Right, and you don't get big waves that far inland.
Right. Well, we did have a question about from George in Alabama asked, how is the Silver Run? Has it improved in recent years?
I mean, it kind of depends on where you are. This year was an exceptional run to Puget Sound. So the fishing on the east side near where I live was excellent off the beaches and the guys that went out in the boats with the non-fly fishing stuff. On the coast rivers, which usually do better, it's been a real spotty coho year. So
when you say coast, you're talking about when you say coast, you're talking about the west coast.
Yeah, the west coast of the peninsula.
Okay.
Yeah, out here we call that the west end. So maybe if I use that term, it'll differentiate that. But on the streams that run into the ocean have had a pretty spotty coho run this year, or it just hasn't shown up. But it was excellent on the east side this year. The fish go into rivers in Puget Sound.
What's the season for the cohos there? Is it August and September, or is it later?
Yeah, that's when it's. And back in here on the the rain shadow side, we still were catching nice bright fish well into October.
Oh wow! Yeah, because it's a little later than last.
You start getting them in. Yeah, you start getting them out on the the coast, and the western strait in July, and then I guess August is better, and September is real good.
Okay. Another question from Bob in Rhode Island. Want to know if you get any striped bass up that in the Washington area.
I've never heard of any getting this far north. I think the farthest I've ever heard is sort of like south, mid-southern Oregon.
Okay.
So we're a little far north for that.
Okay. We got a bunch of questions here that I call them my where should I fish questions.
Right.
And, some of these you may want to just defer to later in the show when we're talking about a particular area, but let me run through them just so that we can cover them for the folks that wrote in, and I always appreciate any questions we get in for the shows. Phil in Murray, Utah wrote in, and he says, I have one day to fish the first week of December. Where should I go? We are driving from Utah to Bothell.
Yeah.
My son is defending his dissertation on Thursday, and I need somewhere close to go.
Well, he might do better to actually fish over on the Puget Sound side. The peninsula involves like a ferry ride and coming across the bridge. And early December, it's a little early for the peak of the hatchery winter steelhead runs on the coast, and that would be a long trip. That would be something you could do if you wanted to make a really long day of it. Or you could try for, cutthroat in saltwater, the east side beaches. But he might have a better, be able to spend more time if he got in touch with a fly shop in Seattle and figured something out around there.
Okay. Otherwise, the closest thing from there would be to when we talk later in the show about the Coast Strait and Canal there area.
Right. It would be fishing along Hood Canal or the Admiralty Inlet for cutthroat and saltwater.
Okay.
And, to be honest, unless you know exactly where to go in the winter, that can be a pretty slow day. If you have somebody to go with or something, or if you get some tips.
Yeah.
But that would be the closest to Seattle.
Okay. Otherwise, what other December you said steelhead he might find on the west coast?
Yeah, there are already, out in the west end, they call them tweeners, sort of in between summer and winter steelhead. And there's some already coming up to the Bogashiel Hatchery.
Okay.
I heard of at least one. So that's going to start building. It'll be going pretty good by, the week of Thanksgiving and after. It's just early December is not peak. But if he's got the time and wants to do something different, it's real weather dependent early in the winter too.
Sure.
In the winter too.
Yeah.
But that
is
that's going on.
Okay. And speaking of steelhead, Andreas in Sweden wrote in and he says, "Hi Doug, can you give any advice about visiting the Olympic Peninsula to fish for steelhead on your own?" So.
Sure.
What advice?
You know, I actually might know Andreas.
Oh, okay.
It's interesting. I think I rented an apartment from his parents when he was a real little kid.
Oh, okay.
But anyhow, if it is Andreas from Port Townsend, yeah, on your own, I think that's the most fun way to do it. I would just come out to Forks and have that be your base. I mean, I'm presuming he's talking about winter steelhead.
Yeah, he didn't say, so.
Yeah, that's where there are more fish, and they're bigger fish in the winter. I mean, there are a lot more places to fish. So just figuring that, come out to Forks and, you know, get a motel or a cabin or something. And I always tell people that, you know, there's a whole lot of rivers out there. But I would just do a little
research. When you say Forks, you're going to have, Doug, you're going to have to orient people, because when you say Forks, people don't know where that is.
Okay, yeah, Forks is a community on the west end out there near the ocean. And it's the sort of the hub. It's a big logging town. It's population about 4,000. And a lot of logging around there historically, but that's also where all the rivers, they call it Forks because several of the rivers come together and right around town there. And that's the nerve center for winter steelheading on the Olympic Peninsula now.
Okay, okay.
So, and there's, you know, motels and guides and, you know, you can get licenses and stuff there. So that's just sort of where people operate out of.
For winter steelheading.
And I usually tell people, you know, if they have skill level to, you know, cast and wade and know a little bit of what they're doing to still count on about 3 days or so to get a winter steelhead on a fly, especially if you don't know the rivers.
Right.
If you can go with a guide, that'll help that. But what I would do for Andreas, you know, specifically is just pick a river and just work that the whole time for the first trip. Because you're going to do better if you learn a river more intimately like that than if you just sort of race all over, which people have a tendency to do when they come out there because there's 8 rivers or 12 rivers or whatever that has steelhead in them.
Yeah.
And that's what I did when I started, too. But you do better when you sort of dial it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, another one. Scott, Broken Arrow, Oklahoma. My kids just moved to Seattle, and I see a few trips in my future. If you had one chance to fly fish, where in the area, what fish would you target, where, and when? So
that's real hard for me to narrow that down.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're kind of partial to steelhead, it sounds like, huh?
Well, I actually fish for cutthroat more when I fish for myself.
Oh, okay.
It's less, you know, fresher, less complicated. I can go places I'm all by myself. And it's fun to fish for fish that are hungry, too, you know, steelhead aren't even. But if you were going to do one trip, and, you know, it would be seasonal, too. You know, summer steelhead is hard to beat. You know, it doesn't draw the crowds, but at the same time, there aren't as many fish, but it doesn't draw the crowds. So, you know, I think you have an actual better chance of catching the steelhead on a fly rod in the summer, even though there are fewer around. So if you could come out here, you know, September, early October, late August, fish one of the glacial rivers like the Ho, that's pretty magnificent.
And where's the Ho at?
Other than that, I love saltwater cutthroat fishing. I did it every day last week. So.
Oh,
and that's, you know, you find a beach, and the cutthroat are very hungry when they're in the salt, and they're usually in schools, so if you get one, you get a few. And they're very strong fish. And unlike most interior cutthroat, the cutthroat and the salt jump, and they take line, and it's a different sort of experience. So to me, it would be summer steelhead or cutthroat in the salt.
I want to ask you about that in just a second, but I just got a message in somebody in Boise, Idaho. Folks, if you ever have trouble connecting on the Internet, can't get our show live, there's also, when you pop up that window, there's a phone call line that you can dial in on the phone and listen in the same way. So keep that in mind if you ever have a connection problem. I noticed somebody was having a connection problem, but he probably can't hear me. So anyway, back to the cutthroat in the salt. Why are they in the salt? I mean, what are they doing out there?
Well, real, you know, just like a steelhead or a salmon, they're an anadromous fish. So they go to salt water to feed. They have a much more circumscribed, you know, migratory path. They don't go way up into the North Pacific like the salmon and the steelhead do. Most of them stay just a few miles from their native stream. But they're, especially on the east side where the saltwater cutthroat fishing is the best and year-round, it's sort of an adaptation because a lot of their rivers are creeks or small rivers in and like I was saying, the rain shadows in the Northeast Olympics. So the rivers are real low in the fall. And so both the rivers, the major rivers that are low, and then the creeks hardly have any water, the fish have evolved to stay in the salt. Plus, there's a whole lot more food in the salt. And because it's inland, it's salt water, but it's, you know, away from the ocean. They don't have to fight current and waves as much as the fish on the coast do. So they're just a real marine-oriented species, subspecies of cutthroat. And
so
there's a lot of food out there.
So they're out there full-time, then? Saying.
No, they don't they spawn and they rear in the creek, in the freshwater, just like, you know, steelhead.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't spend years, some over winter, I think, sometimes. But what they do is they kind of come downstream in March or so, and then they're in the saltwater and they feed. The sort of traditional, classic life history is they come down in the spring, feed through late spring, summer, and then by fall they start drifting back to their creeks, and then they go up and spawn in the winter. But there's certain places where I fish on the east side of the Olympics where it's protected enough that they stay all winter in the salt. And then they just run up and spawn real quick and come back down. And so I just wrote an article a little while ago, and I speculated. I think they're the most marine-oriented stocks of cutthroat in the world, probably. They basically just use the creeks as places to breed and rear.
Wow. So I think that answers. We did have a question come in on the Internet from Brad on Hurricane Ridge. I think that probably answers your question there, Brad, about the life cycle of the cutthroat sea trout. So,
and it's real varied, you know, so some of them might skip a whole spawning cycle even, and, you know, they're very, they have a real individuality to them.
Mm-hmm. We had another
question. But the basic thing is...
Go ahead.
The basic life history is spring, summer, and early fall in the salt, and the rest of the time in the creeks, but like I said, there's a lot of variation.
Yeah. We did get a question in from Ramona. This is on topic we're talking about here. She says, would like to exit the frozen Northland and fish the Olympic Peninsula this winter. Which month would offer the best likelihood of good fishing?
Well, if she means strictly winter, probably February. March is sort of the prime time for the wild winter steelhead. So if she considers March still winter, that's when I would say, if not coming, you know, the middle.
Well, if she's coming from, like, Alaska or northern B.C., it's still winter up
right
there.
Right. So, I mean, I would come in March. It's a lot nicer, and you're more likely to have the river in good shape rather than blown out, and that's when the big pulse of big wild natives come back.
Yeah, before the runoff starts.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
We don't get a big runoff, you know, classic runoff, because a lot of times the highest flows are in November when we get real big storms, and then sometimes after the season closes. So it has a sort of a two-part runoff in a way. Two-peak flows.
Okay. We need to take a quick break here, Doug, but we'll be right back, and we'll talk more about the Olympic Peninsula. Keeney's Fly Shop in Sacramento, California, features classes on all aspects of fly fishing. They have an extensive inventory and fly tying department, and a friendly, experienced staff whose primary goal is your complete satisfaction. Among their many services, one can book private waters or take advantage of their international travel service. Visit their extensive website at www.keeney.com. That's K-I-E-N-E.com. Or call Keeney's Fly Shop at 1-800-400-0359. That's 1-800-400-0359. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio, and we're talking with Doug Rose about fly fishing the Olympic Peninsula. If you'd like to ask Doug a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them on the show tonight. Okay, Doug, I always like to ask my guests what's going on in their fly fishing world. So what is going on in your fly fishing world?
Well, like I said, I think I alluded to this a little earlier. I've been fishing for cutthroat and saltwater a lot lately. I guide for that. I'm doing a clinic this weekend. You said in the introduction, my focus in my guiding business is I do steelhead and cutthroat on the coastal rivers, and I fish for cutthroat in saltwater and in the tidal creeks on the east side of the peninsula. And I also write about that stuff all the time. This has been a really good coho salmon year, like I said, and I've been fishing for cutthroat pretty much every day. And other than that, like you said, I do a lot of conservation writing, and I did want to bring up briefly how we've all been following the removal of the Elwha dams out here. They were in place for almost 100 years, and they were built illegally without any fish passage. So the runs just dwindled and dwindled and dwindled. And it took a long time, but finally Congress passed it, and finally the money was appropriated. And last year they began taking the dams down. And the rivers are almost completely free-flowing now. The lower dam's out, and I think the upper dam's got a little bit left to go. And there's a fishing moratorium on there for 5 years. It was very weird this summer not being able to go fish the Elwha, which I've gone for all the 30 years I've been out here, especially in October when it's lovely up there. But so if things go well in a few more years, and already they've got wild steelhead back above the lower dam. Wild just have found them in several creeks spawning. And it's very, very exciting. Historically, it was one of the most prolific rivers on the Olympic Peninsula. It had all five species of North American Pacific salmon. It had native char, summer and winter steelhead. The summer steelhead went all the way upriver to within sight of timberline. So having the opportunity to see this maybe come back during our lifetimes is a real special thing.
And that comes out there at Angeles Point, it looks like?
Yeah, just a little bit west of Port Angeles, right in the middle of the Strait of Juan de Fuca.
Okay. And so you sound pretty optimistic about recovery there.
Yeah, I am. I think, you know, there's been an issue with the tribe that lives at the mouth of the river. Part of the restoration plan, they had a hatchery developed, and their plan to put in some non-native stocks of steelhead, and there was, you know, a lot of trouble about that. The other agencies weren't exactly they weren't on board on that. But they held off on that for now, and I think this, you know, 80-some percent of the watershed is in Olympic National Park. That's partly why I should explain I'm so optimistic. It's like a virgin river up there, so it doesn't have a lot of the issues that restoration processes do in, you know, more environmentally damaged areas. Mm-hmm. Once they can get up into that park, it's, you know, pristine.
Wow.
So.
Sounds good. What is your overall feeling for, you know, steelhead as well as salmon, you know, on the peninsula as far as, you know, recovery? You said numbers are down on almost everything in the world, but...
Right.
You know,
that's true.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about...
Well, I'm not as sanguine about that as the rest of the peninsula as I am the Elwha.
Okay.
You know, I've been out here, like I said, quite a while, and things, you know, they're just sort of, as you said, they're just gradually getting a little worse and a little more crowded all the time. So both in terms of the health of the populations of fish and in terms of just the pressure on them from different sources, mm-hmm. it's a tough time, and a lot of groups are struggling to figure out how to address those things.
Yeah. Well, good luck with that. We always want to help support in those areas. Frank in Fort Lewis wrote in. He says, I guess he's back in Fort Lewis, just returned from Afghanistan. Any recommendation on where he should be fishing? Thanks, Frank, for serving our country over there. We all really appreciate that. And says he's armed, interesting term, with several different sizes of fly rods. And he's primarily a trout guy. He loves to chase all fish. So where would you send him if he's primarily a trout guy? Where might he start out?
Well, we could talk about this more in the different sections later, too.
Okay.
If he wants to get going now, I would have him come up and just get across the canal bridge and find some saltwater beach and try to catch a cutthroat in the salt, because you use the, you know, same 5 or 6 weight you do for trout anywhere in the country fishing for the cutthroat in the salt. And you can use a floating line. So, I mean, it wouldn't be any special new gear or anything. Just go to a fly shop and get a few local flies. And that's closer to Fort Lewis than the coast. If he's got some bigger gear, you know, I'd wait till, you know, maybe after Christmas or so, and then come up and, you know, give winter steelheading a shot, you know, pick a river and spend a few days.
George wrote in here on the internet, he's in Bremerton, says, cutthroat in the salt, where's the salt? And the salt you're talking about is the canal, right, primarily?
Well, all that, the Strait of Juan de Fuca, the Hood Canal, and the ocean, that's all saltwater. Puget Sound is all saltwater.
So primarily the east coast and the northeast coast?
Yeah, the northeast and the Hood Canal.
Okay.
So the Hood Canal is the eastern boundary of the peninsula, and then Admiralty Inlet and the eastern Strait of Juan de Fuca in the northeast corner. That's the sort of the main area for cutthroat and salt.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Question, how far is Bothell to Forks?
You got 3.5 hours or so.
3.5 hours, there you go.
Not counting the ferry, probably.
I
would say 4 hours.
Okay. These questions are coming in on me here, Doug, so I'll try to keep them on topic here. But
sure.
We've been talking about the sea run. That's kind of gotten some people fired up here. Says, what are your top patterns for sea run cutthroats? Mike out in Gig Harbor.
Well, that is seasonal a little bit. This time of year, from now till the middle of February or so, I tend to do better on flies that imitate invertebrates, because a lot of the bait fish they feed on in the summer are bigger than they'd like to target in the winter. So flies that imitate shrimp or small squid or amphipods, you know, like scuds in freshwater, they have the same sort of thing in saltwater. So if you use like a true blood otter shrimp or something, that can be a very effective fly in the salt. So that's what I do in the winter. We'll probably talk about this a lot more later, but in the spring, chum fry, and then in the rivers they have pink fry, drift down after they hatch. They don't stay in the rivers like salmon and the other salmon and steelhead. They just drift down to tidewater right after they emerge from the gravel, and cutthroat know this, and they really work the chum fry heavily. So chum fry patterns, I have a fly of my own that you can see on my website called the Keto Rose, and a friend of mine, Bob Triggs, has a chum baby that's real famous, and another friend of mine, Jeffrey Delia, has a Delia's chum streamer. So chum fry are really good from like late February into May. And then in the summer, it's the classic bait fish and invertebrates, like those sand lance patterns and herring patterns. And any time of year, a muddler minnow will imitate a sculpin. So it's got a sort of, just like, you know, insects in a river, and the saltwater has a sort of a year-round cycle of different food availabilities for the fish.
And how do you fish these cutthroat in the salt? Are you fishing the shores? Are you out in a boat?
Yeah, on the peninsula, we're really lucky. Seems like most of the guys that fish Puget Sound, you know, over by Seattle, fish boats because there isn't as much public land. And there's quite a few state parks, county parks, and Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife shellfish beaches on the east side of the peninsula. So most of the guys that fish out here, myself included, we wade fish. And the old-timers' dictum is, tell you how you don't have to be out in the middle, is that they used to always say for trolling to keep the bottom in sight on the shore side of the boat. So, you know, that gives you an indication that there, unless something unusual is going on, you don't have to go way, way out. So we find places and we wade out and we look for rips. I always tell people, look for the rivers in the salt, meaning like find a place where there's moving water that's different from the other water, like a tide rip or a current seam. And if you fish them like you would in a river, you're probably going to catch some fish. You just look for those rivers, and almost all of it is casting down tide and retrieving against the flow. So it's not technical at all.
Okay. Yeah, we just did a show on striped bass up in Plymouth Bay in Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And that might be a show for folks to listen to about, because we did talk about that, and he went into quite a bit of depth on studying the water, you know, like when the tide's out and when
right.
the tide's in, and noting where the channels were, where the structure was to create those rivers. And so it's very interesting to, you really
that's
need to study.
Yeah, I find it, you know, endlessly fascinating. I mean, that's why I love the throw in the salt. And, yeah, I totally agree with the striped guy that if you can go out, if you have time, you know, learn these beaches, go out on big low tides and, like the summer solstice, and you'll just see the conformation of the bottom, you know, you can't even imagine. You know, you find out where the eelgrass beds are, and you find out where the oyster bars are. Both of those types of, you know, habitats are really productive of all the little invertebrates and small fish. So cutthroat are very aware of oyster bars and eelgrass beds and learning the currents and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it'll keep you busy for a long time.
Good, good. Okay, let's start running through the different areas and going to ask you kind of the same questions in each area, and just to kind of, because there's so much to fish there, it's just kind of mind-boggling.
Sure.
And if you can kind of, we can kind of run through these one by one. It looks like we got about 6 sections, and so we got about, if we spend about, you know, 5 or 6 minutes on each one, that's about all the time we're going to be able to do. So.
Okay.
So let's start with number one, rainforest area. You want to kind of describe that area and what makes it so special?
Right. Well, it's the rivers out there overwhelmingly that draw people. And it has, like we mentioned briefly, that it has the temperate zone rainforest, so there's just immense trees out there. A lot of it's in Olympic National Park, and that was one of the reasons it was set aside, is to protect the forests. There's 3 basic types of rivers to fish out there. There's the glacial rivers, and they're the southern ones, the Quinault, the further south, and then the Queets, and then the Hull. They all have a glacial component to them, so that means they carry a little bit more color, what we call. Do you know what I mean by that?
Mm-hmm. Sure, that glacial blue kind of thing, yeah?
Yeah, exactly. So they will blow out a little quicker than the non-glacial rivers, but when it's super cold and stuff, they have a little more color, so it's a little better. The other type is the Kuliut system rivers. The Kuliut's sort of the mother river. It's only about 6 miles long, flows into the ocean. But the three main tributaries of the Kuliut are some of the most famous winter-sealed rivers in the world. It's the Solduck, the Bogoshill, and the Klawa. They don't head up on mountains big enough for glaciers, and so they run quite a bit cleaner, and they clear up after a storm better. So when you're in a place like the rainforest, that's good to know that, you know, you're probably not going to do well on the Queets after a day of hard rain, but if you want to go to the Solduck or the Klawa, you'll still probably be able to fish. And then there are creeks out there, and mostly local guys fish the creeks because you got to know where to go. But the Hoko that drains into the north coast up on the strait, that does have some walk-in, fly-only water, so that's something to keep in mind if you like, you know, if you're an independent kind of person and you want to, like Andreas was saying earlier, and wants to do something on their own, you can get the topo map and figure out how to get up into some of those creeks.
I noticed there, you've got in your map in your book, and what he's talking about, folks, is pretty much the northwest quarter of the peninsula.
Right.
And I take it everything kind of west of the mountains from there.
Right. Right.
And you also said here, on show on your book, on the Ho River, there's some fly-only water, too, up in the upper region.
There is, yeah, in the national park. As soon as you get into the national park, about half a mile from the boundary, you enter a six-mile-long stretch of fly-only water. That it's got a paved road along it for about, like I said, about 6 miles, just so people don't think it's like, you know, just a park and walk straight to it. Most of the places you have to walk, you know, a few hundred yards or a quarter mile or so to the river. And in most of the places, you're not even going to see it. So, you know, you have to be a little intrepid to do that. And just as a caution that the higher up you go in those glacial rivers, there's more non-holding water. You got a lot of braids and fast drops and ripples and stuff.
Sure.
So, you know, you'll have to put in a little time to find the places that the fish will hold.
Yeah. Now, up there, you're going to get brook trout and what else?
No brook trout in the
There,
no. You might catch a char, you know, a bull trout, but you can't target them and eat that. You just leave it in the water and get it off as soon as you can. But the main fish in those rivers are winter steelhead, summer steelhead, and coho and Chinook salmon.
Oh, way up in there, too. Okay. Yeah, they go up high.
Well, you can't target them. So, yeah, let me backtrack on that. You can't target them in the park. You can only target the steelhead and cutthroat.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
It lower down, you know, closer to the ocean. There's a real popular coho fisheries and Chinook fisheries.
Okay.
There's a lot of guides that work out there.
Okay. And so we've got coho, steelhead. What other fish? Now do you
Chinook and summer steelhead. And
summer
cutthroat.
Steelhead?
Yeah, they all have cutthroat.
They all have cutthroat. Okay, that's
The
main trout of the
area.
Yeah,
if you go in the fall in any of those rivers, you're going to have a real good, from midsummer on, have a good shot at cutthroat.
Okay. So you just thought I was asking about best times of year out there in that section. You want to come
Well, it's a year-round thing. If you want to get the big winter fish, come, you know, late February, March, first week of April or so. But then summer steelhead begins in June, and I often do fairly well in June and early July, and then there's kind of a lull when the rivers are real low, and then the Ho seems to be good from midsummer on, and then once we get the rains perk up a little bit, the Kuliut for summer steelhead, Kuliut system rivers, they perk up again too.
And you had said earlier,
cutthroat
or what?
Pardon?
You were about to say something about cutthroat?
Well, they're around. If you hit the right spots and sort of know where to go, you can find a cutthroat about any time in those rivers. But the peak of it, a real good friend of mine, he used to always just say it's the first rise in September. You get a big solid bunch of them. But, I mean, I catch cutthroat in June, July, August, and September in the rivers.
Okay. Next section, then, let's talk about. So, well, before we move on, favorite places to fish there. Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. Forks, you had mentioned earlier, would that be a good place to set up a base if you're coming out there to fish the rainforest area?
Well, that's the place to set up a base. I lived there for 5 years.
Okay.
And that's just for, if you go to the Thriftway, that's the sort of the big supermarket in town, early in the morning, any day from, you know, now until April, you're going to see guys meeting guides, and, you know, it's just a hopping kind of place from the steelhead area.
Okay. And that's your place, probably your favorite place for steelhead is in that area, where the forks are, and the rivers come together.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Any particular favorite for a cutthroat river out of the ones we mentioned?
Well, I have some that I'm not going to mention specifically.
Okay.
If you just get them, if you get a map and look and find some of the creeks and find ways you can get into the creeks. Well, I'll tell you, I love the Kalawa and for cutthroat. And that's a major river. And I also like the creeks for cutthroat. But I also spend a lot of time when I'm just doing something by myself in what I call cedar creeks. You know, their headwaters aren't up in the mountains. And they rise up from springs and cedar swamps mm-hmm. and stuff, so they have that sort of tannic color. And I love poking around in those for midsummer on for cutthroat.
Okay. Rain shadow area. So describe where this area is and what makes it special.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's like in the northeast part of the peninsula. So if you look at a map, it's like from Squim, Port Townsend, down to Hadlock, and just above Quilsing. So it's that northeast corner. And that's in the lee of the Olympics, so it gets considerably less rain, you know, 120 versus, you know, 14, 15 inches a year. Actually, there's some cactus that's native to the prairie around Squim, and so that's most people don't associate cactus with the rainforest. Well, that isn't the rainforest there. The rivers are smaller, and, you know, they've been degraded more, so steelhead aren't open in hardly any of the rivers. And it's more or less sort of a hatchery coho thing in some of the rivers there that are open for salmon. So I think that the most interesting things to do in the rain shadow, if you're excluding going in the backcountry hiking, because of nice mountain lake fishing, is finding creeks and beaver ponds and fishing beaches and things like that. So it's much more cutthroat oriented.
Okay.
And just to give people an idea, the cutthroat, you know, in the creeks and stuff are fairly small, but you know, we've been catching a lot of 17 to 20-inch cutthroat in the salt lately, so they get fairly substantial.
Now, is that where you start seeing them in the salt there, is in the rain shadow
yeah.
area?
Yeah. Now, I don't know if you want to break this. Let me talk about salt in relation to the rain shadow. We're talking about salt later as a separate thing.
No, you I just know, want to me, know where kind of where you would start looking for cutthroat in the salt would be there and then
yeah.
south of there.
I'm from Squim East, yeah,
okay.
And that is pretty much the boundary of the rain shadow,
okay.
too.
Yeah, just kind of curious.
And you know, that all sort of ties together, you know, like a lot of things do, that it's not just the fact that the creeks are smaller and the fish are staying out because the food's better. It's also, you know, it doesn't get as much storms, so then it doesn't have the big waves, so it's easier to fish, and there's also a lot less kelp and stuff in the northeast.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just easier to handle.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, let's take a quick break, and we'll be right back. We'll talk about another area in the Olympic Peninsula. Women's fly fishing in Alaska is owned and operated by well-known female guide Pudge Kleinkopf. Women's fly fishing offers several lodge-based fly fishing schools for women, as well as an array of small group-guided trips for women and couples to some of Alaska's best-known waters for salmon, rainbow trout, Arctic grayling, and char. Pudge also leads saltwater fly fishing groups to Mexico each spring. Beginners are welcome, and equipment is provided. To learn more about fly fishing for women, go to www.womensflyfishing.net. That's womensflyfishing.net. Or call Pudge at 907-274-7113. 907-274-7113. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Doug Rose about fly fishing the Olympic Peninsula. If you'd like to ask Doug a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. We'll receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as we can on the show tonight. Now, I'm not sure where this is, so maybe you want to mix this in at the appropriate place, but Lance on Bainbridge Island wants to know about the crazy black mid hatch, I guess, that came off this year that was, I guess, unusual on Indian Island.
Oh, in the saltwater. Yeah, in the saltwater he's talking about.
Oh, okay. Indian Island. Where is Indian Island?
Indian Island is in the rain shadow. It's near Port Hadlock, just a few miles.
Oh, okay, so it's about the area we've been talking about, yeah.
Right, it's saltwater. Yeah, that was I blogged about that a lot.
Okay.
You know, you don't tend to associate insects with saltwater.
Right.
You know, because they don't live there. But yeah. Some do a little bit. And there's Indian Island is an island we fish around a lot. There's a lot of good public access to it. And the cutthroat hang around there year-round, you know, most in the summer. And fall, but they were somewhere around all the time. And this summer we had this extremely weird thing that happened that first off, a whole bunch of different schools or a huge school or something sort of took up residence, you know, usually cutthroat and saw will move around a lot this following date and move in with the tides and currents and stuff. But they stayed on this one flat for 6 weeks, and they would be jumping and boiling. It was just like, you know, you're in a lake or something. And at first, I couldn't figure it out because really, I said to a friend, I said, it looks like they're, you know, hitting insects in the Spring Creek. You'd see the bulge and everything, and every once in a while, one would come straight out of the water. Uh-huh. And one of the guys I do cutthroat clinics with, a good friend of mine, I told him about it, so he took his dog down, and he's walking along. And he's a fish biologist, too. And he said, they're hitting midges. And I said, what do you mean? And he said, there's all these thousands of midges are up in the kelp that gets washed up on the bank. And then they were getting sort of entrained in the salt water when the tide came up. And then some of them were apparently just getting on the water from landing. And so he went back after he saw that. He didn't have a rod when he took the dog. And he went home and got some Griffith's gnats and went back and caught like six fish right away. Hmm. So that was very bizarre. And that worked for a while, and then they seemed to get off that. But the fish hung around. That was one of the more unusual things I've ever seen, having sort of fishing insect patterns in the saltwater for cutthroat. And they were definitely feeding on
them. Interesting, yeah. I noticed in your book, too, you talk about quite a few lakes in the rain shadow area. Are those...
Right. I was just going to bring that back up. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, and one is sort of not exactly in the rain shadow, but I'd like to start with that. It's Lake Crescent. It's west of Port Angeles, so it is drier there than out on the coast. So that's sort of a borderline. That's like a 10-mile-long lake, and historically it drained to the Elwha. So it flowed out of the east side and through Indian Creek and went down to the Elwha River, and then so anadromous fish would come up into it and get in the lake and feed, then they'd go out and run around in the ocean. And then there was a huge landslide, you know, thousands of years ago that ended that access to salt water, so the river overflowed a different creek and had a different outlet to the ocean, but there was a falls on that. So the fish that were in the lake when that happened, all the salmon that don't live, you know, after they spawn died out, but the sockeye that were in the lake, they turned into kokanee, and the steelhead became rainbow trout, resident rainbow trout, and the serum cutthroat became landlocked cutthroat. And because the kokanee were in there, they had this great food source. And so the lake is pretty sterile and doesn't have a lot of spawning creeks and shoreline that's shallow with vegetation. So what happens in there is there's not very big year classes of fish, but the fish, once they get to be about 14 inches, have a lot of food. And they're, you know, in the early 20th century, there are like 14 resorts around there. People caught 4, 5, 6 pound and up to high teens trout all the time. That got sort of knocked down, but the park implemented stricter regulations 10 years or so ago, and people still catch real nice fish there. And fly fishermen have been pretty much the only people on it in recent years because the park banned downriggers, and it's catch and release now, no bait. So that's a real interesting fishery.
Yeah.
And, you have a chance. A friend of mine's kid years ago caught a 20-pound fish out of there, and he himself has taken 8-pound fish on dry flies out of it. So that's a real interesting fishery. But most of the rain shadow lake fishing is smaller lakes, woodland lakes in the lowlands. And it's mostly, you know, put and take, hatchery fish kind of thing. But you do run into wild cutthroat every once in a while.
Okay. All right. Anything else you want to say about the rain shadow area?
No, that's pretty much it, I think. The beaches and the lakes are the most popular fishing.
Okay. On to oyster country. Love oysters from Washington State, I'll tell you that.
So I
take there's probably some oysters in the oyster country, huh? You want to describe that area?
Yeah, that's pretty much the canal that I'm talking about there, mm-hmm. Hood Canal. So that starts up in the northeast and runs all the way down the east shore of the peninsula, and then the canal makes an abrupt turn to the east. But pretty much the northern and central parts of the canal is the eastern boundary. And that is the reason I call it oyster country in the book, is it's famous for oyster production. I actually worked in 2 different oyster hatcheries in there years ago. And a good friend of mine, Jeffrey Delia, I fish with all the time, and he's an excellent fly tire. He's got a lot of different flies that he's created, and he was an oysterman for many years. That is pretty much, when I fished there years ago, I was really into beaver ponds. And the east side of the peninsula has a lot of beaver ponds if you're willing to look for them. And that is, you know, like beaver ponds anywhere. Nobody's going to tell you where they are. But if you get topo maps or get some aerial maps and stuff, it's possible to find them. Also, there's tidal creeks in the east side of the peninsula in the oyster country. And by that, I mean, you know, small creeks that flow into the canal and the tide will back up into them on a high tide, you know, from 100 yards to, you know, significantly more. And so in the fall, those the cutthroat come up into those. And that's a fantastic fishery, I think. Most of the small creeks close at the end of October, and I just did my last last day of the season on my favorite Cutcher Creek, a place, a tidewater creek that I've been fishing for, you know, more than 25 years. And I got really lucky because it had been just pouring, and it was high, and there was high tide, and they're kind of treacherous. There's all this slop, you know, from the tide, and it was real hard to walk, so I knew I couldn't cross the river or anything, so I just made it, had like 30 yards of the river I could fish from the side I was on. And I made a few casts, and I caught a nice 14-inch fish. So I figured I better get out of here before I fall in. But that's real exciting. And then, you know, we'll talk more about the cutthroat in the salt, but that whole eastern shore is excellent cutthroat in the saltwater fishing, too. That's
so
where I fished most
days. This is the prime area for the cutthroat in the salt, is the oyster country area?
Yeah, that and then Admiralty Inlet, which is just north of the mouth of Hood Canal. Yeah, that whole shore. And cutthroat like to hang around oysters because there's all sorts of invertebrate life, like I said, in there. And then the near shore, you know, that's where the oysters are in the near shore. That's also where you see a lot of the bait fish and the chum fry and those sort of things.
I noticed you highlighted a fly here called Widgeon Girl in that section, which looks like a wet fly to me.
It is. Yeah, and it's just sort of a knockoff of a soft tackle. Like, yeah, I made that fly up myself, and I call it Widgeon Girl because duck hunting is also really good along the canal if you have access. And I was lucky enough, I lived right on the beach for 5 years, so I had 3 duck blinds and a really good dog. And so I had lots of widgeon feathers, and I love soft tackle patterns. So rather than the Hungarian partridge, I used a widgeon plank feather, and that's kind of like that russet pinkish with barring, and it makes it sort of looks shrimpy to me. And then I used the Pearsall's, you know, silk. And that's been a really good fly for the tidewater and in saltwater for me, but particularly in the tidewater creeks.
Where the cutthroat?
Also, my friend has, and in my book also I've featured that Jeff Delia, a friend of mine, he has a fly called Delia's Conehead Squid, and you can see that on my blog or in the book. And okay. A friend of ours who just started fishing a few years ago, she used it a few times and got a fish every time. She started calling it the magic fly, so it's a very good fly too.
Good. So, well, you've kind of indicated you want to talk more about the cutthroat and the salt, so is now the time? Did you want to?
Well, no, we can talk about anything. I would like to, you know, because it sort of touches on both the rain shadow and the oyster country, if we could talk about the mountain lakes a little bit.
Okay.
I think anybody's interested in that.
Okay,
and then
go ahead.
Just because the way the mountains are laid out here, the river valleys are long on the west side where the steelhead fishing is in the rainforest. But the mountains come up real close to the canal on the east side, so the oyster countryside. So you don't have these long walks to get into the mountain lakes. You know, you can drive up to the end of the logging road and a lot of times, you know, 3, 4, 5 miles are up in the high country. So I've always liked that feature rather than have to hike for, you know, a day and a half to get into some place. And also just the way the geology played out on the peninsula, a lot of the hardest rock is in what they call the Crescenti Formation on the northeast in going down the canal. So those areas have held the lakes longer than the ones that were silted in and stuff on the western side. So there are a lot more subalpine and alpine lakes in the northeast corner of the park and the national forest. So that's another sort of fishery, obviously summer fishery, that is can be very productive.
Okay, I see that what you call the oyster country is kind of at the, well, I guess it covers the whole end of the canal, but you have a whole other section in your book called The Coast, the Strait, and the Canal. So,
right.
I'm a bit
confused. And that's what, yeah. Yeah,
what
that, see, we've been talking about saltwater in conjunction with the different areas, but in those chapters in the book, I only talked about the saltwater in the section about Coast, Strait, and the Canal.
Oh, okay.
So all the saltwater discussion is in that section.
Okay, okay. But, so we're talking about the same section really there, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break here, and then we'll come back, and we've got some more places to cover. So stick with me, folks,
right.
And we'll be
remind
right
me
back.
To talk about the coho and the salt, too.
Okay, all right. You remind me. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. Have you ever dreamed about the classic actions of bamboo fly rods? Did you know that it's possible for you to make your own bamboo fly rods? With the help of Power Fibers online magazine, you can do just that. Power Fibers is a magazine dedicated to making bamboo fly rods and telling the stories about bamboo through the ages. From rod making techniques to stories about fishing bamboo rods to rod maker profiles to classic papers, Power Fibers has it all. Visit their website at www.powerfibers.com. That's www.powerfibers.com. You're listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We're talking with Doug Rose about fly fishing the Olympic Peninsula. If you'd like to ask Doug a question, just go to our homepage at askaboutflyfishing.com and use the Q&A text box to send us your question. Receive your question immediately, and we'll try to answer as many of them as possible on the show tonight.
Let me talk a little bit about the cutthroat, because since we've been, I've been talking so much about cutthroat.
I do have a question that just came in from Scott Hood in Broken Arrow. He wants to know, on the Hood Canal, what size tippets do you use for the cuts in the canal there? How do you rig up?
Yeah, pretty much I just buy 9 foot 3X, and that's fine. They're not real shy.
Okay.
And if they are getting real, fussy, you can just put on, 12 inches of 4X. But a 9 foot 3X leader is great.
Oh, okay. No tippet?
Well, just down to 3X. If you bought a 9 foot 3X leader, that'll be fine. Yeah. And then, if you want to put a little bit of 4X on, you could. But a 3X is perfectly adequate for cutthroat and salt.
Okay. So there you go, Scott. So what were you going to say more about the cutthroats?
No, about the coho.
Coho. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, because it's more seasonal. You get it on the east side of the peninsula in the midsummer into fall. But like I said earlier in the program, it was really good this year, and that's a thing that's become much more popular. When I first lived here a long time ago, there was some beach fishing, but it was almost all guys casting jigs from the beach. And now, probably half the guys you'll see on different beaches are fly fishermen. And this year it was really interesting because in the past there used to be a little bit of tension between the bait guys who did great. I mean, one of my best friends fishes bait for coho off the beach. And, they just catch a couple fish every day, it seems like. But this year it was really interesting. I think people are getting better at it and figured it out over time, because I've heard a lot of the lure and bait guys say, God, you fly fishers are doing as well as we are now. So that's been real exciting as people have learned about it. And I got this, like most fly fishermen, I'm always playing around with different gear, and I came up with a outfit that I would really recommend anybody if they want to get seriously into that. I use a switch rod. It's 11 foot, and it's a 6-weight. That seems light, but a switch rod is pretty, can handle some fish. And I use an outbound and an intermediate head on that, and it's really nice because with a single-handed rod, you have to do so much fault casting to get out line, especially if you're going to do a long cast. But with this, it's like I roll cast the line to bring the head up to break the plane, and then that gives it the tension I need, and I just do one two-handed back cast and shoot the line. So it's much less effort, and it's very effective. So I'd really recommend that if somebody wants to get into that.
I got a question in on the Internet that was asking about your books. And two of your books are through Frank Amato, right?
All three of them are. One's out of print.
Oh, one's out of print? Okay. Okay,
yeah.
So there you go, Phil. Both of them through AmatoBooks.com or Amazon, or I don't know, can they get them through your website as well, Doug? Or?
Well, if they go to my website and click it, it'll take them to Amato.
Oh, okay. So there you go.
Either Amato or Amazon or somebody. It takes them somewhere.
Okay.
And I'm going to try to bring my first book back, too. So.
Oh, good. Question, got some more questions coming in here. Treg in Moscow, Idaho wants to know what flies you use for winter steelhead. Do you use mostly beads and egg flies, or what do you use?
I don't. Some people do, and they do well. I think, everybody has flies they like, and I think you should fish what you have confidence in. And over the years, I've done a lot of different kind of stuff, but it's sort of evolved into, I probably only fish a half a dozen or so patterns, mostly for winter fish. The spey flies that Sid Blasso and Dick Wentworth's a real good friend of mine, that they developed for those rivers back in the 50s and 60s. I like fishing those, so I like fish sole duck spays, orange herons, and their different patterns on the Mr. Glasso and the Chiquilloid. So I tie those, and then I fish general practitioners a lot in, you know, all three colors, black, orange, and red. And there's a old Scottish pattern, the Bewley Snowfly. It's got peacock earl on it, and I've done well with that. And so those are my main pattern. And now I have a pattern of my own that's sort of it looks a little bit like an intruder. I came up with it independently, and it doesn't have as much weight on it, but it's long and ostrichy. And I just call those winter light. It's a series of different colors for different water conditions. So that's pretty much all I use. And
it's quite an arsenal.
The spay flies. Pardon?
I said that's quite an arsenal.
Yeah, that's enough. Most people out here, they'll probably use marabou spiders, bunny leeches, and intruders. Those are the most popular flies.
Okay. George in Bremerton, he says, we keep referring to the book. What's the title? The book I'm referring to is Doug Rose's book, Fly Fishing Guide to the Olympic Peninsula. And that's kind of a book that's covering all the areas. He's got maps in there and talks about the different fish in the different areas and so forth. And then your other book is Steelhead Fly Fishing on the Olympic Peninsula, where you're just dealing with steelhead. Is that correct, Doug?
Yeah, that's right. And that's more of an essay book. I address a lot of conservation issues and stuff in it and have stuff about history and the flies and stuff. So that's not a how-to, really. It's more of a learn about the area and the fish and the flies and stuff. And, you know, okay. I talked about some techniques and stuff, but it's more of an essay book.
Okay. So you want a little background about the area, then that's the book to read. And then the where to go would be
the
fly fishing guide.
Right, and the steelhead book has a lot more about the, you know, problems and stuff of management.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And, you know, I'd like to recommend a different person's book for the people who have the interest in the cutthroat. It's Les Johnson. He's a sort of an iconic cutthroat fisherman out there. He has a book called Fly Fishing Coastal Cutthroat Trout, and that's also a motto. And you can learn enough to keep you busy the rest of your life out of that book.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah, that sounds sounds like another interview coming up here. Yeah, so there you go. Fly Fishing Coastal Cutthroat Trout. I see it right here on Amazon. And 4.5 stars. Must be a good one.
Yeah. Oh, it does.
Okay, we still have some time to go here, and the area that we have not talked about is the Grace Harbor area, right?
So, right, down on the Chehalis Basin.
Chehalis Basin.
Yeah, that's the southern, for people who don't know, that's the southern drainages of the Olympics. And, to be perfectly honest, that's the area I fished the least because it's the furthest away from where I've always lived. But I have fished there quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
That has steelhead rivers, and the Satsip and the Wenuchi, and it has quite a few lakes. And there's some interesting fisheries down there. The guy I was just talking about, Les Johnson, who wrote the Cutthroat book, he grew up down there in Aberdeen. And he's older than I am. He's in his 70s. And so he was sort of in the great days of cutthroat fishing down there and steelhead. And I lived on the coast, like I said, for a number of years. And I used to go down to Aberdeen to get groceries because it's pretty remote where we live. And there's a river, if somebody sort of has an exploring kind of nature, that I've always wanted to do this myself, it's sort of a dream thing, is there's a river called the Hoquiam. And Les told me when he was young that when they were boys, they had like rowboat. And they would put it in near the mouth on the incoming tide, and they'd float way up, and there's three forks of this river, and they could go way upstream and catch cutthroat, and then when the tide turned, they would just roll back down. And a lot of that area still is timberland and stuff, so it would be a real interesting area to get into a canoe or something, and just or a kayak, and go up there and just see what you could find. I've driven by it a lot of times, and every time I go by, I think, why am I not doing this? But it's just a long ways from where I live.
What's the name of it?
That's the Hoquiam.
Hoquiam. West Fork of Hoquiam?
Yeah.
Oh, and there's an East Fork of Hoquiam.
There's three forks of it, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, you'd have to know what you're doing. But, I mean, it's very interesting. And then those rivers have good cutthroat runs. And then the Satsup, I fished that with some good friends. And that has an actual, it's pretty famous, not so much anymore, but historically, and there's still remnant of it. You know, most rivers, the coho coming up in the rivers on the coast is in October, early November kind of thing. In the past, and you could still catch a bright coho in the Satsup well into December. So that's a thing to keep in mind, too.
Mm-hmm. So any more you want to say about the coho, since you just mentioned that?
Well, that, like I said, it was sort of a weird run this year on the West End rivers. But so that's kind of tailing off now. So we're really heading towards winter steelhead time.
Okay. And then you also had a section in your book relating to the backcountry.
Right.
Is there more you want to talk about that than what we already have talked about?
Maybe talk about the rivers
hiking,
a little bit.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The Elwha used to go up there every summer. You know, the Elwha River Trail. Like I said, when we were talking about the dams coming out, more than 80% of the Elwha is in the park, and most of that's in the wilderness park. So the Elwha Trail follows it, you know, loosely all the way up to the headwaters. And once that reopens again, it'll be kind of amazing. In the past, it was really excellent rainbow trout fishing up there because they were landlocked. But, you know, once they get some summer steelhead up there, I think it'll be, you know, amazing. Especially for younger people, it'll be around as it keeps getting better, which I think it will. So that's sort of the most famous long hike into the backcountry. But many of the rivers have, you know, populations of cutthroat or rainbows or whatever, if you're willing to hike up trails. Like the Bogoshiel has a trail that's out on the coast, and you walk for miles and miles and miles before you start climbing. So if you want to just hike and get some cutthroat in the summer, and that's a great place. I like to fish the park because it's not as crowded. I used to have a hole on the Ho that I fished almost once a week from fall through into winter. And it was about 3 miles in, so it's not, you know, horrible. It was back when I was younger. I got up there in a little over an hour and caught summer steelhead like you wouldn't believe, and winter steelhead every other time or every third time. So, and then there's trails up to Quinault, too. So most people associate national park fishing, you know, in the mountains with trout in the lake, and there's excellent fishing in the lakes. But if you look at the river trails, you can also find good cutthroat fishing in some, and then, you know, in some rivers, even summer steelhead. So that can be pretty amazing. You're way off the road and you catch something like a summer steelhead. Unfortunately, that pool that I went to for all those years, it got blown out during a big storm, so it doesn't exist anymore.
Doesn't exist, huh? Yeah. Well, George in Bremerton just told me he bought your book on Amazon, so.
Well, thank you.
Good thing we told him where to get it, huh?
Yeah, yeah.
And he just wrote in another question, let's see here, on the Internet. He says, we're seeing an October-November arrival of silvers here in Dyes Inlet every year. Any word on them? They are hard to catch, not interested in eating. Any tips for George?
Yeah, that's kind of out of my area, but that's not unusual. When the fish get close to their river, they get real lockjawed. It's called the waiting period, and there are specific flies that you can look up and try to do it. And you can catch them sometimes, but that's just sort of part of the life history. They sort of go off the feed a little bit as they get near the river.
Is it then they're striking more out of habit than anything else?
Yeah, and
aggressive
for you to catch fish in that situation, usually you have to have a lot of them around.
Yeah, so you have a lot of contact.
Yeah, right, and it's the same with the chum that come in this time of year on the east side. Chum fishing is going on right now, and that's a big salmon next to Chinook, that's the biggest. And you can catch them, but you know, you've got to have a bunch of them around usually for you to catch any. It's just a numbers thing.
Yeah. Yeah, but if, for both
it was
of those.
That George's question?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah. Yes, it was.
Yeah, well, if he looks up on the Internet for waiting period flies, they tend to be small. They're almost like little soft tackles, and it looks like an absurd fly for catching a fish the size of a coho, but they do work.
Okay. Yeah, I was surprised that, you know, when I was fishing in Alaska, I was fishing during the coho run, and the chum were in there, too. The chum were ahead of the coho, actually. But, yeah, caught a lot of chum on small black nymphs. You know, which really surprised
sure.
Yeah.
Right. Well, and the winter steelhead guys that fish below floats, they use nymphs too, and they do really well. So, yeah. But the chum, I didn't mention them much. Just, you know, like you said at the beginning, there's so much your mind doesn't settle down on it. But the chum fishing is going on right now, and it'll go on for a while longer. And they're amazingly strong fish. If you've caught them in Alaska, you know that. I mean, you can break rods easy on chum.
Yeah, everybody kind of focuses on coho and the kings, you know, chinooks. But I had a blast catching the chum, you know.
Oh, yeah, they're real bruisers, aren't they?
Yeah. So don't ignore the chum. It's got such a great name, but it's
right.
Another question on the internet from Eric and Raymond. He says, any tips for kings on fly? And he's talking about of both Kitsap beaches. Does that ring a bell, Kitsap beaches?
Well, I know Kitsap's a peninsula just east of the Olympic Peninsula. I don't have any real tips for that because, you know, I just don't do that.
Don't fish
but
for the
I kings? Not from the beach, usually.
Okay.
If you get one incidentally, and, you know, it can be done, I'm sure, but that's just not something that I would be able to give him any useful information
on.
You know what he would do? Maybe he should call over a Peninsula Outfitters in Kitsap County. It's in Poolsville, and Bill Drury
that's
there.
That's where he's at. Yeah.
He would help him out. Yeah. Down to Peninsula Outfitters. Pardon?
We're stepping on each other, Doug, when we talk. So you want to repeat that again?
Yeah, just go to Peninsula Outfitters. It's right in town in Poolsville.
Okay. He probably knows about that. So there you go. Let's see what else we got here. We covered that one. There was a question here from Lanson that was on Bainbridge Island, and since we have a little time here left, he wanted to know about how you became a fishing guide full-time and what was your jumping-off point. When did you decide?
Well, I'm not a fishing guide full-time. I'm primarily a writer. Yeah, I'm primarily an outdoor writer.
Okay,
and
there you go.
As anybody knows, the outdoor writing business is not exactly. It's a peak of its history at the moment. And about 10 years ago, I started I always did a little bit of guiding, you know, sort of informally, but then I got, you know, started doing it professionally. So I've only been doing it about 12 years, I guess. And it's just as a sideline.
Oh, okay.
So that's how I got started. But my main job is an outdoor writer. And I go talk and do clinics and stuff. But the guiding is just part-time.
Yeah. Brad, another came in here. Brad, we talked about the life cycle of the sea run earlier in the show, so you might want to listen to the recording on that. I did cover that earlier. Okay, well, I think that's about wraps it up here. We got around the whole peninsula here, but folks, you wouldn't believe all the places to fish. You really should get Doug's book if you're at all thinking about going out there, because there's some excellent maps in there, and it'll guide you around the places to go. So I highly recommend that. So we'll have to wrap things up here. We are going to, but stick around. We're going to give away that one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers and a one-year subscription to Fly Fusion magazine, as well as Doug's book, Fly Fishing Guide to the Olympic Peninsula, so courtesy of Frank Amato Publications. So stick with us here, and we'll be doing that in just a few moments. And Doug, stick around with me, too. I want you to help me at the end here give away your book.
Sure.
So. Great. A mining company called Pac Rim Coal is planning a massive strip mine near Anchorage, Alaska. The Chewitna Coal Project would be the first project in Alaska history to mine directly through salmon habitat, the Chewitna River drainage, 11 miles of it. Critical commercial, sport, and subsistence fishing economies would be permanently destroyed. Pac Rim says it can rebuild a salmon stream, but scientific experts can find no example where successful restoration has occurred after strip mining. Chewitna Coal would be shipped to Asia, leaving Alaska with nothing but devastated habitat and ruined salmon runs. It's time to stop the Chewitna Coal strip mine. If you want to help out with this, you can find out more information at www.inletkeeper.org. That's www.inletkeeper.org or www.trustees.org. Trustees.org. So if you've got an interest in conservation and protecting wild waters, there you go. Help out there. Just a quick reminder to everyone before you leave the website tonight, please take a minute and give us your feedback about the show. You can find a link on our homepage in the section under tonight's show and says, what did you think of the show? Just click on that link and leave your comments. We'd really appreciate it. Well, it's now time to give away our prizes. The winners for our drawings are randomly selected from our show's registration database, and it's too late now to register for tonight's show, but you can do so for our next show. Be sure to do that so you can win one of the great prizes that we do give away. Now, the winner tonight of either one of these will be contacted by email, and then we'll get your information that we need to send you the membership or the subscription. So the first thing that we're going to do is give away a one-year membership to the Federation of Fly Fishers. And to learn more about the Federation, go to fedflyfishers.org, fedflyfishers.org, a great organization to participate in and be a part of. So our winner there is Lorne Leong, and I'm probably destroying your name, but you know who you are, and up in British Columbia. So congratulations on that membership. And Lauren, we'll be contacting you by email to get you connected to get that membership. So congratulations on that. And now, Fly Fusion Magazine, one-year subscription to Fly Fusion Magazine. And that is, Steve Goodchild. Steve Goodchild in the UK. So I'm sure still a lot will be applicable. This is a Canadian publication, Steve, but I know you'll get a lot out of it, and it'll be a great subscription for you, too. So congratulations to both of you there. Now, regarding our question for tonight's show to win Doug's book, this is going to be a little tough one. Well, maybe not. This is real kind of obscure, but Doug mentioned that one of the areas we talked about tonight had native cactus in it that grew there sometimes. So what area was that area? This is kind of unusual to ask a question like this, Doug, but I want to make it a little harder for him tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Because he had to be listening closely to that. So we're waiting here, Doug. Oh, Treg. Treg Owings in Moscow, Idaho. I don't know how many prizes he's won, but he is good.
Oh, really?
He says rain shadow. I think that was the correct answer, right?
Yes.
That's the correct answer.
Yeah.
Good. Treg, I didn't think you wrote that down in your notes. You must have a good memory. So you win again, Treg. What can I say? He's one of a longtime listener and participates a lot and sends in a lot of questions. I appreciate it. So, Treg,
congratulations.
Winner again. Remind me, though, send me your address again because I don't keep those around so that you know the routine by now. And we'll get you out Doug's book. And for the rest of you, mottobooks.com or out on Amazon. Just type in Doug Rose in books, and you'll see his books there, and you get his books there. So that's what the rest of you will have to do. Well, Doug, I really appreciate you being on the show with us tonight. It was a pleasure to talk with you and learn all about the Olympic Peninsula. It sounds like a great place to fish and explore, and it sounds like you've spent a lifetime exploring it, so kind of endless opportunities.
Great. Yeah, I had a really good time. Thanks for asking me.
Well, good. Good to have you on. And folks, hopefully you've all found out archive on our website. If you haven't, please explore it. There's a couple of links on our homepage and a link at the bottom of every page on the site. I think we've got over 155 shows or so now in our archive, so go out there, poke around. You can search by keyword phrase like trout or Madison River or steelhead and find all kinds of shows that will help you get educated and make you a better fly fisher. Our next broadcast will be on November 21st, 7 p.m. Mountain, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and on that show we'll interview Boots Allen. And our topic for the show will be Snake River Fly Fishing. Boots is a third-generation Jackson, Wyoming fly fishing guide, and he's going to be sharing his secrets on fishing the Snake River. Locations, flies, techniques are all covered in this in-depth interview. So check in with us then, and we'd love to have you on the show. Be sure to submit some questions for that show, and we'll try to get them answered when we do the live show. We'd like to thank Federation of Fly Fishers, Fly Fusion Magazine, Royal Gorge Anglers, Teeny's Fly Shop, Women's Fly Fishing in Alaska, and Power Fibers Online Magazine for sponsoring our show tonight. If you think your company would benefit from sponsoring one of our shows, give us a call at 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. That's 1-800-985-1673 extension 8. We'll be happy to explain the options available to you. Don't forget to visit our website at askaboutflyfishing.com and make sure you're signed up to receive our announcements so you don't miss out on any of our future broadcasts. Thanks for listening to Ask About Fly Fishing Internet Radio. We hope you enjoyed the show. That's it. Good night, everyone, and good fishing.